Will you pray with me? God, may these words and our hearts be open to your Spirit. Amen. A couple of years ago, when I was here visiting my sister and brother-in-law, we went to see Keegan Michael Key do improv at a comedy club in Detroit. Keegan Michael Key, hereafter known as Key because I can never remember in what order his names go, Key is best known probably as a comedy partner with Peele. And you can see some great YouTubes of the two of them doing improv. But on this night, Key was performing with a group of about six people whom I had never heard of. And they all stood up on this little stage, and they started by asking for a word from the audience. And this audience was ready. They knew all about improv. And so they began to shout out these crazy, off-the-wall words. And the performers stood on the stage and picked out a word, and they stood there for a while thinking. And then one of them stepped into the spotlight and started to create a scene based on this crazy word that I can't even remember now. And after a little while, someone else from the group jumped in and took over, and that first person left, and then at the right moment, another person joined her, and the two of them went back and forth for a little while, and then someone else came on, and it went that way. This flowing of the performers on in and out of the spotlight. Taking the scene from one word and moving it forward and forward all night long. Now, I did not catch every word. They talk really fast. And I didn't get all the jokes, even the ones that I could hear, because I'm just not that cool. But it was still, the ones that I did get, it was a hilarious evening. And it's just amazing how these people could work together, developing scene upon scene upon scene from one word that they had never heard before, without a script, and with no idea when they started how it was going to wind up at the end for a solid hour and a half. Amazing. Not long after that, back in Kansas City, a doctor of ministry student at Central Seminary, where I worked, wrote a dissertation on, of all things, improvisation. He said that Paul, who is the writer of letters that we call books in the New Testament, was actually improvising ancient scriptures to help the church move toward what was unseen, what it could not see, which happens to be the meaning of the Latin root for the word improvise, moving toward what one cannot see or foretell, which is exactly where the church is today, not to mention the world. Then along came a scholar who looked at that text in Luke that we read today. Now, normally, of course, we read this in Advent. You may have recognized it. But today, we're reading it in August, in the spirit of improv, doing things in unusual ways. This scholar said of Mary's song, that we also know as the Magnificat, Mary takes Hannah's song. Now, you can read Hannah's song in 1 Samuel. That one was written centuries before. The scholar said Mary takes Hannah's song and improvises. Does God do improv? Could this be a way that we could move toward the unforeseen in our day and in our church? The dictionary definition of improvisation is the art or act of composing, uttering, executing, arranging anything without previous preparation. Now, it is true that there is no script and that those who participate in improv have no idea where they're going when they begin. But it does take preparation. Improv is a skill, and it takes discipline and practice. Even Key and Peele needed discipline and practice to get as good and funny as they are. And it has rules. The first rule, according to Tina Fey, say yes. Improv begins when someone offers an idea, a word, an image, a perspective, a problem, and someone else accepts it, says yes. Let's start there. In jazz, the improviser begins with the key and the rhythm and the mood that the band is already playing. The band sets the stage from which the improviser can then create something wonderful and original. One time, a hot, new, young horn player was doing a guest appearance with a famous jazz band, and when it was his turn to start to play, he began in a whole different key. The conductor stopped the band, and he said, "That's not how it's done, son." Actually, he may have used a few other words that are not appropriate for church on Sunday morning. The improv group at the comedy club began with a word that the audience provided. Mary starts with a centuries-old song by Hannah and other ancient themes that you will find in Isaiah and Psalms and many other places throughout Scripture. The weak become strong, these beautiful opposites. The feeble, firm. We live with war and violence all around us, but God is all about mercy and grace. God keeps God's promises from Abraham and all the way on. Improv never starts from nothing. Rule two. After yes, comma, say and. Most of us tend to be a lot better at yes, but. I know I am. While the person I disagree with is talking, I'm very busy putting together my best argument to persuade, convince, or better yet, shut that person down completely. But improv only works when you add something of your own. It's about building and creating. And it takes someone who is not afraid to add his or her voice, not afraid to jump in, to take the spotlight once in a while or share it with someone else, even though it means walking toward what cannot be foreseen. Mary could not have known where her yes to God would lead, and how understandable it would have been if she said to that angel bringing news about a pregnancy to someone, thing, the spirit, other than her, the man to whom she was engaged, "Yes, but I do have a few concerns and questions, possibly reservations." Instead, she said, "Yes, and I will call this a blessing." It happened once at Prairie Baptist Church during one of those endless contentious meetings that we seem to be having all the time about worship, how to worship. I haven't been here long enough at First Baptist Ann Arbor to know if you have these conversations or have ever had them. But Some people loved the old traditions, the old hymns. They had all the words memorized. They had been singing them from birth. They loved this music. They had bought the hymnals, and they had dedication pages, you know, in the front with the names of loved ones. The old stuff was precious and beautiful and meaningful. But then there were others who wanted fresh, new music and new words and new instruments like guitars and drums and a great big screen up in the front of the sanctuary. These disagreements happen so much, and they can be so destructive that there's a name for them. They are called worship wars. So the argument went back and forth until finally a young mother stood up. And she spoke with appreciation and gratitude, and by name, she spoke to the older members of the church. And she told how much she valued their long faithfulness and generosity to this church that we all loved, and their ways of worship and all the things that they had taught her over the years. She said a great big fat yes to them. And then she said, and she told the story of how her experience of worship now included some of the new things, the different things, the changing things that were beautiful and meaningful to her. Now, that didn't solve all of our problems, but the spirit in that room certainly changed. We weren't enemies anymore, and it made all the difference. To walk toward what cannot be foreseen takes practice and skill and the ability to listen and trust in others around you. And that takes humility, which is something that David Brooks is writing about in the New York Times. He says that the most powerful answer to fanaticism is modesty. Having the courage to understand that the world is too complicated to fit into one political belief system, and that there are no easy answers or malevolent conspiracies to explain everything, and that crushing foes is not the answer. It takes humility to listen, to trust, to believe that you'll figure it out together. You cannot do improv if it has to be all about you. What I loved most about Key and this improv group that we saw was that nobody, not even Keegan-Michael Key, was a superstar that night. They all stood on this tiny stage the whole night long and supported one another. So whoever, one person or a small group would be in the spotlight, and the others were just a few feet away on the side of the stage, and they were cheering and laughing and applauding at whatever it was that that person was doing in the center, high-fiving. They were saying yes and waiting for their turn to step in and carry it forward. Improv will not fix everything. But we might learn something from holy improvisers like Mary and Paul, who did not live in easy times either. And remember how Jesus came not to throw away the law, the traditions, but to extend and fulfill. He was always saying, yes, and. Amy Butler is senior pastor at the iconic Riverside Church in New York City. It's a huge Gothic revival, cathedral kind of a place, affiliated, by the way, with American Baptists, as is Amy. It was built by John D. Rockefeller, no expense spared. And it's a very prominent pulpit. Martin Luther King Jr. preached there. When the Pope comes to visit, he visits there. When Amy preaches, a lot of people notice. Earlier this year, she preached about gun rights, and she mentioned a person named Todd Underwood, who is the founder and the director of an online gun marketplace called United Gun Group. And this is the place that George Zimmerman went to sell the gun for a lot of money that he used to kill Trayvon Martin in Florida. You may recall that story. It set off a tremendous amount of racial confrontation and violence and conversation, argument. A couple of other online gun sites had refused to allow George Zimmerman to sell that weapon. He was acquitted, as you recall, of that murder. They refused to allow Zimmerman to sell his gun on their websites for ethical reasons. But Todd Underwood said, Zimmerman meets the requirements of this site and therefore he is allowed. I will allow him to sell his gun here. So Amy, who is a very strong advocate of gun control, used this story in a sermon, as well as other stories, some related to Todd Underwood, as an example of how hard it is to love our enemies. Now, whenever I preach a controversial sermon, I kind of hope that everyone who disagrees with me will quietly get up at the end of the service and just go home. But a few weeks after she preached, Amy got a tweet from Todd Underwood, who had read her sermon and wanted to talk. So Amy got up her courage and she called him up. At first she couldn't remember who he was, but she Googled and she said, oh yeah. She got up her courage and she called him up. And she could hear in the background his little children playing. And he was polite on the telephone. And they had a conversation, and he was coming to New York City, so they agreed that they would meet and talk. He came to Riverside Church. Now, Todd and Amy could not be more opposite in their convictions about gun control, about abortion, Donald Trump, probably women in ministry, just about any hot-button issue you could name. But they talked. And after a while, Amy asked him, if you could sum up the Bible in one sentence, what would it be? And this very conservative evangelical Christian said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and your neighbor as yourself. And Amy said, that's exactly what I would say. They could not agree on much, but they could listen to each other, which happens to be one way of expressing love, isn't it? They came together with humility and courage. They do not know what's next for our country or even for their conversation. But Todd and Amy got to yes and. Unexpectedly, friendship began between them. Improv never begins from nothing. But our God shouts out a few words. The weak become strong. The feeble become firm. It's all about mercy and grace. God keeps God's promises. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. Let's start there.